People ran in the streets, screaming. Doors left open swung on abandoned houses. Overturned carts blocked the way. Bodies lay in the gutters, beaten and robbed. Dar galloped past all of this, several Mamluks and Egyptian warriors riding with him. He watched smoke plumes rising over the north end of the city. That was where the breach had been. That was where the Franks had entered. Soon, they would fill the city. Dar crouched deep in the saddle, leaning into the lightning pace of his horse. Through back alleys, they rounded corners before coming straight upon the Tower of David. The guards raised the gate, and they trotted up into the citadel. When they were dismounting, Iftikhar came out to meet them, trembling in brocaded silks. Like brambles in winter, his fingers quivered. "Ya Allah," Iftikhar cried, "all is lost, everything." Dar slid his eyes away. He could barely stand to look at the Fatimid. His hand yearned to seize his dagger, to plunge it into Iftikhar's belly. A gleam teased his eyes' side. Dar raised his head. He walked up to one of the turrets and stared out over Jerusalem. The gleam came from the dome of the rock. Like a sun tied to earth, the shrine radiated. Smoke had begun to thicken in the interior of the city. From this height, the ambient shrieks hummed, constant, the sound of neighing war horses and fire getting louder. Dar plopped his elbows against the stone rail. His eyes hung heavy on the great glorious dome of Islam, the sign of the Prophet's favor with Allah. His heart turned to a lump of ice. "Lord Dar," Iftikhar said, "you must help us. We must keep the Franks from entering this citadel." With a hand still resting on the rail, Dar swung around. His cheeks went hard. "Who is in this tower?" "All of my court," said the Egyptian. "My wives, my children, everyone of rank. They must make ready to leave. You cannot hold the citadel. You must flee at once. Perhaps you might make it to Ascalon. And what about you?" "I will die with Jerusalem." "No, we need you. We cannot travel without you. Most of my guard has been destroyed. I will not run while infidels desecrate what is holy. I am going to the dome to stand between her and these kuffar." Iftikhar collapsed at Dar's feet. He gripped the hem of his cloak. Dar struck the dark Egyptian, throwing him back, disgusted to watch the man kneel before anything other than Allah. Just then, one of Dar's Mamluks came running through the door. "Master, the Franks are here." While Iftikhar choked on tears, Dar strode back toward the wall. When he looked down, he saw that a large company of Franks had surrounded the citadel. They'd thrown open the Jaffa gate and put crossbowmen on its parapets. He could see the Count of St. Gilles and the Duke of Normandy riding up toward the tower beneath bright banners. "Never mind," said Dar loudly. "We shall all suffer for Jerusalem. It is Allah's will." A Frankish knight, dressed in red, rode up close to the wall. Rearing his horse, he called out in Arabic, "Surrender. My lord the Count will be merciful." Dar skulked away toward the stairs. With what remained of their guard, Iftikhar and Dar went down to the gate, which was opened immediately for the Frankish commanders. Surrounded by blood-splattered knights, all of them wearing the cross, the Duke of Normandy and the Count of St. Gilles waited on horseback, garbed in scarlet cloaks. Dar remembered them both from Antioch. The sight of St. Gilles gripped him. His face had the gaunt harshness of a troll. Normally, St. Gilles wore a sash over his bad eye, but today it was absent, revealing the hideous white of the old man's scarred eye. Iftikhar's muscled black guards laid down their spears and daggers. The Mamluks placed their bows and quivers at the hooves of the Frankish horses. The Fatimid general shivered as his coal-lined eyes watched the Lord of St. Gilles. With a dancer's elegance, Iftikhar bowed low at the waist. "Lord of St. Gilles, the Turks have said that you are a man who has never been known to break his word. Therefore, I surrender this tower to your keeping. My master, who is lord of all Egypt, shall cause a rainstorm of gold to descend upon you should we return safely to his lands."
"Tell your master to keep his gold," said Raymond. "Ascalon, it belongs to the king of Egypt?"
"Yes."
"Then that is where you shall go. My knights will accompany you for the first mile. After that, you may ride on until you meet with the army of Cairo. But if you wish to live, do not travel with them, for soon we shall meet them and scatter them."
Iftikhar and his companions crouched lower still before Raymond, and Dar could hardly stomach the blasphemous display. The Count only looked at them coldly.
"Get up," he said. "Now is the time for flight, not cowering near to the earth." His attention turned toward Dar. "This one seems to understand."
"It is forbidden," Dar said, "to lower oneself before any but Allah."
Raymond's horse tossed its white head.
"I know you. You served Yagi Sihan. I see you have survived Antioch."
"As Allah wills."
"And I suppose it was your God's will that we take Jerusalem?"
"Yes," Dar tilted his head.
Iftikhar's household came filing out of the tower. A few Ethiopian guards, eunuchs with long eyelashes, women veiled in brocade, children with gold rings in their noses and ears, aging mullahs. Still, the sound of battle screamed from within the city, echoed from beyond the rooftops. Iftikhar's women clasped the children near to them. In the eyes of the ladies, Dar beheld something familiar, a quiet horror, a despair. He realized where he had seen it before, in Christian women captured during war. Count Raymond turned over to Iftikhar a team of costly Arab steeds. Then he rode with the Egyptians to the edge of his camp, Frankish knights riding with them. The Count turned, gazed back at Jerusalem, and Dar did the same. By now, the sun began to hang in the west. The city glowed in dusty haze. The fires of war scorched scattered rooftops, and Frankish banners flapped over the walls. Above David's tower hung the gold and red cross of Toulouse. The twin lions of Normandy threshed at the new gate. Dar swallowed hard. They had been riding in silence. The silence deepened. Raymond's knights crossed themselves. The Muslim children watched them, teeth chattering.
"How long has it been?" Raymond's dark voice ruptured the quiet.
"My lord," replied Iftikhar, "forgive me, how long has what been?" "How long," repeated the Count, "since the sons of Muhammad took Jerusalem from the Greeks?" Iftikhar's fingers danced at his black chin.
"I cannot say."
"It was long ago," said Raymond. "This is a new time. The cross is triumphant. When you return to Cairo, tell your caliph he'll be safe in Egypt so long as he gives aid to the Latins in the war against the Turks."
Iftikhar bowed.
"If I may speak freely," Raymond nodded.
"Surely my master the caliph is eager to aid you against the Turks. But did he not send emissaries to your camp outside of Antioch, asking you for just such an alliance? Why did the Franks reject his offer?"
Switching hands on his reign, Raymond started off at a lope.
"Because," he called out, "you would not grant us Jerusalem."
And with that, the Frankish warriors barked to their horses, and the animals leaped into cantering back toward the city. Dar did not watch them. He accepted Allah's will. He would not go down before the dome. He mounted an Arabian mare and, without a word, led the survivors south toward the coastal road.